Radio.
Radio.
X.
The Radio X Evening Show with Gordon Smart.
All right, Vin.
All right.
We're keeping it very informal today on the Evening Show podcast.
Yeah, it's like you've sort of wandered in on us.
Good afternoon, welcome, bienvenue.
And where are you making it more formal now?
Well, I don't know, I'm trying to find a happy medium. Should we have some franglais?
I'll tell you what, I'm going to bow.
Are you going to bow? Okay, I'm going to salute you, Vin, as you do that.
There you go.
Yeah, that seems like the right way to start the Evening Show podcast.
Anyway, hello.
Hello, Vin. Has it been a good week for you this week?
Yeah, it's been busy.
Yeah, what have you been up to? You've had a lot on, haven't you?
Big guests.
Yeah, we've done well, haven't we? Gary Lightbody's return. Snow Patrol. 7 years. I couldn't believe that, actually. 7 years since they last released some material.
I love that new single as well.
That's bad writer's block, isn't it? 7 years. I think it might have something to do with living in LA as well. When the sun's on your back.
Distracted.
You've got a surfboard. There's a wheatgrass smoothie on the go.
But you know what's... So, yeah, Gary Lightbody from Snow Patrol.
Yeah.
But I'm more excited about another guest that we had.
Was it Codeline?
I don't... No offence to Codeline. Very lovely, lovely people. But we had an icon on the show.
We finally got Hooky on. Peter Hook. It's been a long time coming. We've been trying to get him on the show for a while. He is the man behind Hacienda Madness, I think is the best way to describe it, because I've read a bit more of his book this week. And I actually felt a bit ill after reading it.
It's a really good title, isn't it?
How not to Run a Club.
That's it.
And it's just full of that kind of mank humour all the way through it. It's brilliant. And Hooky is just one of the best guests you can ever get on a radio show. He's a very funny man. And on top of that, we didn't just have Hooky, we had Codeline on the show as well. You will know Codeline without even realising it, because they wrote the theme tune to Gogglebox.
Best thing on TV.
You love it, don't you?
It's the best thing on TV. Rather than watching TV, I'll just watch Gogglebox.
I think we would make quite a compelling partnership if we were on there.
We could be on it.
So I just almost told you you're my partner there. You imagine that. So what kind of sofa would we have then? Separate chairs?
No, it'd be snuggled up, wouldn't we?
I would like a
sharing a blanket.
A love seat with a reclining one side reclining, so you've got your feet up.
Yeah.
I'm just sitting there quite alert.
Quite a sensual setting for watching Scottish football.
Well, that's what we would be watching, the highlights and sports scene of Hibernian's greatest triumph.
Ping it!
This is the Evening Show podcast. I hope you enjoy.
Radio.
Radio.
X. The Radio X Evening Show with Gordon Smart.
I'm Gordon Smart, this is the Evening Show on Radio X, and I'm absolutely thrilled to say that a great man is in the studio. We had Mike Pickering before, but we've gone one level up, beyond the DJ box, to the owner of clubs. I'm going to introduce him by the way he's introduced in his book, right? Peter Hook was born in 1956 in Salford. He was a founder member of Joy Division and New Order, and now DJs throughout the world as himself, and also with the revived Hacienda. Now, Peter Hook, who else do you DJ as well as yourself?
I DJ in my alter ego. No, anyway, there's two great men in here, mate. Don't put yourself down.
Your son as well.
Oh, yes. That's
three great men. Can I just play that? Hooky is
don't
brilliant.
Try and steam in now.
Hooky, it's great to have you on the show. Thanks for coming in.
You're welcome.
Now, Hooky, one thing I've noticed about seeing bands abroad and things like that, I remember seeing Paul McCartney in Germany. Everyone went mental for Obladee Obladah, which I just couldn't get my head around. But your music, does it respond differently, or do crowds respond differently to your music wherever you are in the world? Do you know what songs work better?
Well, I must admit that I react badly to Obladee Obladah because I got beat up once in Trafford Park. It was playing on the radio on the bus and I got beat up by a skinhead. So, it doesn't bring back fond memories for me. No, I mean, the weird thing is with Joy Division, people tend to know everything very well because there's only so little of it. So you don't really get that sort of different nationality thing. With New Order, I can't say that I'm aware. To be honest, you know, wherever we played, people generally wanted BLT and Blue Monday, and even if we went through a phase of not playing it, you know, after a few boos and bottles thrown at you, you tend to bend.
You get into it.
So, yeah, I mean, it's a difficult thing trying to please an audience. I'm sort of like, I mean, with Neil Young on that one.
Yeah.
You know, he says you should never try and please your audience.
Right, yeah.
Because you spent so much time getting them to like you. You know, you can't do it. You do it because you believe in yourself and not try to win them over by doing something that you think they might like. You have to be true to yourself, and I think he's absolutely right.
Well, speaking of that, you're here to talk about Hacienda Classical, right, which is back out again this year for more dates. Mm-hmm. It's been an incredible run the last 18 months. Sorry, Glastonbury, Royal Albert Hall. Remarkably, you know, with lads like Mike Pickering and Graham Park, you haven't ended up clawing each other's eyeballs out yet.
No, we're all great friends, actually. The interesting thing about it is I didn't think it was going to work in a genuinely
on Sundays, genuinely.
Yeah. I just didn't get it. I couldn't see it. And my partner, Paul Fletcher, was desperately trying to talk me into it. And it was only Graham, actually. It was Graham's enthusiasm when he heard the idea that swung it for me, because, you know, I respect him immensely. And I thought, well, if he thinks it's a good idea... I mean, what struck me afterwards, actually, when it became as successful as it has, was that these songs, in the same way that people grew up their whole lives through the Hacienda, literally starting going there when they were 14... and, you know, meeting a girlfriend, getting engaged, getting married, getting divorced, you know, midlife crisis. It was all done over that 17-year period. And to the soundtrack of these songs. And these songs have been with people forever. But they're all, a lot of them are one-hit wonders.
Yeah.
And they've never been performed. So very few people have seen these songs performed. And all of a sudden, you're there with your favourite DJ, watching them being performed.
Radio X.
The Radio X Evening Show with Gordon Smart.
Okay, it's a real pleasure to finally get you in. And what a year ahead you've got, looking at these days for Hacienda Classical. It's quite intimidating, and I'm not even
it's
doing
scary.
It.
It's scary. Yeah.
So you've got May to September, you're out on the road, Glasgow, Lancaster, Esher, some great venues as well, and festivals in there. Are there any that you would pick out? I think I would pick out the Highland Show in Edinburgh, playing a cattle market.
Do you know what? The one of the great things about going to all these places is that I find the crowds are fantastic in all of them. And if you look at a place like the Isle of Wight Festival, you know, it's such a compliment. Kendall Calling, they're all great venues with great audiences. So I've grown up, and it was funny talking about gigs, because I remember doing one of the first ever Joy Division gigs in Oldham Tower Club, and we played to no people. No one.
Zero.
Just a guy sweeping the floor.
Yeah, character building, though.
Well, yeah. But we didn't care, because we were just glad to play.
Yeah.
And then you end up at Glastonbury in front of 130,000.
Yeah.
And the way I look at it, as long as it's in between there, not an 130, I'm happy.
On the spectrum.
With wherever it lands. So, I mean, it's a great compliment.
You know what I loved about it as well, Hookie, was people watching, right? So I loved the gig, and it was great to see the ensemble of talent you had. But watching the people, right, that were there, do you recognise a few faces in there as well?
Well, I mean, I recognise a lot less than people recognise me and go, oh, God, I remember you that night we had in so-and-so. Yeah. I'm like, oh, my God. I'm sort of always on the other end of it. But, yeah, I mean, you know, the thing is that as you get older, you go out less. But when you do go out, you do tend to make the most of it. So because I'm sober, I have been now 13 years, I tend to be like you, watching people and thinking, oh, my God, it's going to take you a week to recover, mate.
You know, okay, I've reread the book recently, How Not to Run a Nightclub, and it just makes me smile on every page. There's something that makes me laugh. And, you know, I was looking at the acknowledgements at the back today, and I thought, that must be the most difficult part of any man from Manchester's book. Because you know, just, again, had a screwdriver in your ribs every time. Why didn't you thank me? I drove the bus that took the lads to there. And
well, no, it never it never came to that, actually. I mean, the thing that kills me when you're doing a book is when you get the legal read.
Yeah.
And they check all the good bits.
Everything goes, yeah. We'll move on from that. I've got more from Hookie in just a second on the Evening Show.
Radio X. The Radio X Evening Show with Gordon Smart.
A man I knew many moons ago is back after 7 years. Sixth album, I believe, the last
album
five...
Album 7.
Album 7, that's right, isn't it? Sixth album, this is the seventh. First in 7 years.
The first in 7 years.
Yeah, Stato. It's great to see you, Gary Lightbody from Snow Patrol.
Thanks, Gordon. Thanks for having me.
How does it feel dipping your toe back in the water after 7 years away?
Good.
Yeah.
Good. Like, I'm excited about it. I'm excited about having new music out. I'm excited to get going again. Really, really excited about touring again. But
yeah,
it's taken a long time. So until the first single, and maybe even until the album comes out, I'm not going to believe it until it's all out there.
I mean, first things first, it's new music, isn't it?
And yeah.
Like we say, 7 years since we last heard something from you. And I think it's probably good to start with a quick summary of what's happened in the 7 years. Because I remember you were teasing us last year that there'd be something coming soon, then it didn't come. But here it is finally. Now, what was it that held us up for that time?
Well, we finished touring 2012 and... we'd been basically album tour, album tour, album tour, album tour. So we wanted to take a little break. So we were expecting to take 2 years just doing other things. But those other things kind of did go. I mean, I went and did another album, Tired Pony. Nathan did a, started a band called Little Matador. Johnny McDade writes and produces acts like Ed Sheeran and Alicia Keys and many others.
Doing all those other things, did it make you all realise how much you valued Snow Patrol?
Yeah, I think it. I think once we got back into the studio, once I was happy with the songs, we got back into the studio, it felt like we always have been doing this. You know what I mean? It felt very easy.
The team is back together.
Yeah.
It's a good omen, right? You've timed your run pretty well because Ireland has just won the Grand Slam.
Yes.
Rory McIlroy's picked up his first trophy in 18 months and a Snow Patrol album is on the way. Is this just written in the stars? I love a bit of superstition.
We're heavily linked to Ireland's sporting achievements.
Michael, listen, Northern Ireland's football team has been successful for the first time in a long time.
It's been amazing to watch Michael O'Neill and the lads do so well over the last sort of 6 years because, you know, I've been to Windsor Park many times in my life, sitting in the rain, watching us lose to Liechtenstein 4-0 or something, you know. So Michael O'Neill could just, I mean, we don't have a king in Northern Ireland, but...
Well, Jimmy Nesbitt,
Michael O'Neill and Jimmy Nesbitt are odds-on joint kings for Northern Ireland.
And you, of course, as well, Gary.
Yeah, I'm court jester.
Now, I'm going to play the new single in just a second. It's a really optimistic title, Don't Give In. Can you tell us the story behind this song?
Well,
it feels optimistic to me, I should say.
Yeah, it's a song about a friend who was struggling, and I was trying to, trying to speak to him, trying to help him through it, and... as you know, friends do for each other, and plenty of friends have done for me. And then I kind of realized that I was actually really writing about myself and struggling through making the album, which, you know, up to that point had, you know, already taken 5 years or 6 years even probably. So it became a kind of a talisman for the record, you know, because there were plenty of times during the making of it where I just thought that I was never going to finish it, that I wanted to quit, that I'll never write another song, that I'm just not good enough. And it became the song that kind of spurred me on.
Oh, here we go. So for the very first time here on Radio X, this is the brand new single from Gary Lightbody and Snow Patrol. This is Don't Give In here on Radio X.
Don't give in. No, you dare quit so easy. Give up.
Radio
X.
The Radio X Evening Show with Gordon Smart.
That's the brand new Snow Patrol single, Don't Give In, on the Evening Show here on Radio X. Gary, it's great to have it. Bye, that's a brilliant song. That's fantastic. That's good news for us.
Thank you.
After 7 years.
Thank you for playing it. I really appreciate it, Gordon. Thank you.
Ah, good stuff. Now, Gary, I've seen you play some amazing gigs over the years, right? Tea in the Park, there was one at Brixton that I'll never forget around about 2004, 2005. Really amazing, amazing gig. But never mind all of that. Could you give some bands who are listening a little bit of hope to know that sometimes it doesn't always go to plan? What's the worst gig you've played?
There's been so many to choose from. There's been so many. One in Leeds, Joseph's Well, where only one person showed up. That one person, I think I'm right in saying, and I apologise to Bob from Franz Ferdinand if it's not true, but I think it is true. I think it was Bob from Franz Ferdinand who hasn't joined Franz Ferdinand yet. He was the only person that came to see him play.
Did he dance? What did he do? How did he react?
I don't remember that. I think I've kind of tried to block the gig out. I know there was only one person there, and that I believe that it was him. Sorry for shopping him in if it wasn't. There was plenty of bad gigs. There's a good gig in the Olympia that went bad because I fell off the stage, the Olympia in Dublin.
That's bad.
I was rocking out of the front of the stage, as one does, and I just lost my balance.
Yeah.
And I fell, and I was standing right in the middle of the stage, so when I fell, under the stage, there were steps. So it was maybe 6 foot down.
That's a good height.
The steps made it close to probably 10 feet down, and I landed with 1 foot on one step before my other foot hit the step below it.
Did you ride
so
out?
All the impact went on one foot, and I just immediately, I could feel my foot just go like just inflate, And I was standing, and the crowd were like cheering. Everyone was going, yeah, rock and roll. And there was people like rubbing my head, like rubbing my head, going, go on, Gary. And I'm thinking to myself, I've broken my leg, I've broken my leg, I've broken my leg. You guys are cheering. And I get back on the stage, and the rest of that tour I had to do in a chair. And not in a throne like Dave Grohl did. He did it right. Yeah. He did it right. I did it in like a, you know, like a stool.
Thanks for sharing that, Gary. But I could share one of my most embarrassing moments. I asked one of the worst questions in the history of journalism to you before Live 8 in 2006 or whenever it was. I said, is this the biggest audience you've ever played in front of, Gary? And you said, what, 2 billion? Yes, Gordon. And it was in front of the world's media. I learned a valuable lesson that day. Now, Gary, you're talking about dates and gigs and all that, so you must be dead excited. But other than that, falling off stage stuff, you must be itching to get back out on tour.
Yes, yes, we're really excited. We've got some great gigs to announce very soon, and really looking forward to it. The diary is, stacked with shows until, you know, well into next year.
So how much democracy is involved in deciding the set list?
Democracy in the set list? How much? Well, I'll tend to do the set list, and if anybody has any issue with a particular song, they'll say, let's not do that one tonight.
Right.
But yeah, I kind of take over when it comes to the set list.
Yeah. Yeah.
Benignly. No.
There's a lovely passive aggression about this conversation, Gary. I can sense it.
Yeah, you can do the set list tonight. Yes, you can. And then I go over to Neil, our tour manager, and say, can you just take 6 beers off his rider tonight?
Radio. X. The Radio X Evening Show with Gordon Smart.
Now, did you catch this? On Sunday night, Chris Moyles caught up with Matt and Dom from Muse. It's a great chat. You can watch the whole thing at radiox.co.uk, but there was one thing in particular that caught my attention. Here are the guys discussing the iconic 2001 Muse track, Plug In Baby, and in particular, how it got its name.
Plug In Baby was an Argos catalogue. We were flicking through an Argos catalogue in your room, weren't we, when we were about... And you flicked through, and we said, "Listen, what's this Plug-In Baby?" It must have been a Glade thing or something. It just sounded cool. It just sounded like a good name for a song.
All seems honest enough so far, doesn't it? There you go. Plug-In Baby was inspired by an Argos catalogue. Great story. Everyone's happy, except Matt and Dom came to visit me on the evening show last year, and I asked a very similar question, slightly different but very similar. So it should have got a similar answer, right? Check this out.
It sounds made up, but it was written above a sex shop. I was living in this sort of commune type situation, and with a mate of mine, Jake. Remember? And do you remember that little room on the side?
Yeah,
it was above. It's still there in Exeter, but we would rehearse above there because there was some space above it that no one was using, and that's where that song actually came to be. It's a Plug-In Baby. You can imagine. Yeah.
There's the inspiration.
Finally, no, that is factual.
A lot of detail thrown in there. His friend Jake, a sex shop. Doesn't sound like Argos to me, does it? It's certainly a different edition of Argos than I've been reading. There's something fishy going on here. Let me play a little bit of Belgium's finest detective Poirot and his theme tune in N'est-ce pas? And when I realised that, I went back to listen to my interview, and this jumped out.
This sounds made up.
That is factual.
Ah, the plot thickens. Someone's telling Porky's. This sounds made up, but this is factual. The man protesteth too much. So which is the real answer? So I did a bit of digging, right? But all I found was even more questions, right? The rabbit hole gets deeper. In 2001, Matt Bellamy told Rocksound that Plug-In Baby is about the path evolution can take, abandoning all individuality, becoming a collective whole via cables, and genetically engineering bodies that can exist out in space. Now that is a very Muse answer, isn't it? Sounds realistic, and it's quite fresh, around the same time the song came out. But then in 2004, an Aussie journalist, a chap called James Matheson, asked Matt and Dom about the song. Here's Matt's answer. Can't remember now. What is it? I read some book about, I don't know what it was. Something to do with him. Don't know. Can't remember anymore. So what I'm telling you here is that he sounds very confused. That makes two of us. Something shifty afoot here. If you think back to 1998 in the World Cup in France, the England team developed a little game where they would throw in song titles to make their interviews a little bit more entertaining for the players, because I think they were asked the same question so many times they had to try and liven it up. I think we might have rumbled Muse up to the same thing.
any road up. I've asked Muse's label for an answer. No answer from them yet. They are keeping tight-lipped. You'll have to watch this space.
Radio.
Radio.
X.
The Radio X Evening Show with Gordon Smart.
Peter Hook is here, and I've been looking forward to asking him to contribute to the book / Gordon. Now, the book is all about awkward conversations with famous people in the bathroom, inspired by a chance encounter with Sean Connery. And the idea, Hooky, is to carry it on, you know, one person to the next, famous person to famous person. And there's a brilliant bit in the book, because you, this sounds really glamorous, but you had your own toilet at the Hacienda. Now, people might think that's
yes,
a private, salubrious room. It's not, is it? It was a bucket.
It was a Hellman's mayonnaise bucket. But it was mine, right. It had my name on, and it was in the kitchen, and we under-toileted the Hacienda and overpopulated the Hacienda.
And you'd have been hassled every time you went to the box as well, I presume.
Yes, well...
But you must have had an awkward... There must be plenty in there from all the years of festivals and tours and stuff.
The most interesting one I can think of, the toilet story, was when we did the premiere of Control in Cannes. And it's 2 hours long, Control.
Yeah.
So at the end of it, you are bursting. So anyway, I had to run off, and I ran in the toilet and, you know, got him out. And I looked round, and there was the actor that played Bernard, the actor that played Steve.
Yeah.
And the actor that played Ian. And I looked round, and they were all looking at me. And I thought, I said... Where's the guy who played me? And Sam Riley went, he's in Hollywood. And I said, there you go. You should have played me. Then you'd have been in Hollywood.
You should have taken your little Hellman's mayonnaise bucket with it, didn't you?
Radio.
Radio.
X. The Radio X Evening Show with Gordon Smart.
I'm joined by the fellow of the University of Central Lancashire, so we can call him Gandalf, down in front of him. He is probably the co-founder of two of the best bands ever to come out of this country, Joy Division and New Order. Peter Hook, it's great to have you in.
Thank you.
Of all those things, including Monaco as well, what's the one thing that you are most proud of?
My family.
Yeah?
Yeah, it has to be, yeah. I mean, pales into insignificance. Music, really, when you've been a father.
Yeah.
It really does. And, you know, when did they say that? You're only as happy as your unhappiest child.
Yeah.
So that's what I'm most proud of. To be honest.
Great answer that. Peter Hook and The Light are going out on tour as well. So just to make life even more complicated and chaotic, 30 dates in America, dates over here. It's going to be a busy year, isn't it?
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it, actually. I really am. I mean, it's great to enjoy it so much with people who know what you're doing. They know that you love the music. They come along. They know exactly what I'm doing. And we're all there enjoying it together. It just does exactly what it says on the tin. There's no why or wherefores about it. It's just, I love this music. And the guys are out there going, and so do we.
Yeah.
And I'm like, thank God for that. It's cool now.
I could sit and blow smoke up your backside for amazing gigs. But I'm not going to do that, right? Because what we'd like you to do is offer some encouragement to maybe some musicians listening about when it went horribly wrong. What was your worst gig?
My worst gig ever was when we did the first time as New Order, we played in Holland.
Yeah.
We played for 21 minutes. There was no security. The audience went ape, which was, we were bad as well. And they started throwing things. So the crew got involved and they were throwing things at the crew and the crew were throwing them back. Then it turned into a big fight on the floor and my mate, the sound guy, was getting beaten. So I jumped off to help him. When I jumped off, they all went, oh! He's out of the band. And they all jumped on me like a rugby scrum. And one of them punched me and knocked me out. And the roadies had to come out with dustbins and beat the people off. And they got me, grabbed me and dragged me backstage and sat me down on a flight case. And the first thing I said to him was, no milk on me cornflakes, man.
What?
Because I was unconscious.
Out of your mind?
Yeah, I was out of my mind. Yeah. And so that was a lesson.
Yeah,
if there's a riot in the audience, don't go out if you're in the band.
You don't get involved.
Yeah. So that was probably my worst gig.
That hurt.
I bet it did hurt.
Hopefully none of that happening on these tour dates. Who came light? They're going to do Technique Republic, all that stuff?
Yeah, we start that in September. Yeah. I'm looking forward to that. It's nice to play these substances in America as we are doing, because they're such great LPs. Amazing. So contrasting. It's wonderful. Yeah. But we're enjoying starting with Technique, my favourite album, and Republic, which is probably my least favourite album.
Right.
So, yeah, I've got an interesting
Yeah.
Interesting job there.
Coco in London, Glasgow as well, at the ABC, and a few other in between. On a really serious note, we had Arcade Fire on the show this year, and they played Love Will Tear Us Apart at the Old Trafford Cricket Ground as a sort of tribute to what had happened in Manchester last year. Mm-hmm. And we listened, it was a really, really emotional and moving thing. And I understand your daughter was at the Ariana Grande
concert,
which is almost a year ago now.
Yes.
I mean, that must have been horrific for
a man. I've never taken a phone call like that, right. And I hope I never will ever again. I mean, she was very lucky in that she stayed for the encore.
Yeah.
And if she hadn't, if Ariana Grande hadn't have done that encore, they reckon that 2,000 more people would have been injured, if not killed. Yeah. So the fact that Ariana did it as a tribute to Manchester just about says it all to me. Yeah. But it was the most horrible thing I've ever been through.
The reopening of the Manchester Arena, we went up for it that night, and it was incredible to see how Manchester rallied around and how music played a big part in it as well, you know.
Yeah, I mean, the interesting thing is my brother's a policeman,
right,
and he's in charge of the contingencies, and he planned all that response to that atrocity. So I was very, very proud of him for that. Yeah. Well done.
It's amazing how your music can play a part in healing a city as well. That must make you proud too.
I'm immensely proud of that as well. But, you know, I went to the concert afterwards that Ariana did, and, you know, you feel so much for anything that you'd have to bear for the rest of your life with that. And my daughter's still troubled now, you know, and she was one of the lucky ones. She was injured getting out, but she was definitely one of the lucky ones, as were we as parents.
Oh, well, Hickey, thanks so much for coming in. Thanks for talking about that as well. It's a real pleasure. Best of luck with these gigs. Can't wait to see the Hasse and the Classical again. And, you know, just try and keep your hands to yourself with Mr. Park and Pickering when they start moaning about who's got the best rider and demanding stuff backstage.
You know what? We share a room.
Do you really?
Yes, well, three of us are in the same room.
Yeah, like a weird married trio.
Radio
X. The Radio X Evening Show with Gordon Smart.
I'm about to talk you through the sound of one of my favourite acts here at Radio X. I'm about to explore the influences of Jamie T. Jamie is a massive talent. He's 4 incredible albums in now, some unbelievable tunes along the way, and a huge following to boot. He emerged out of South London about 10 years ago and is now verging on superstar status, just like an older band I love and who mean an awful lot to Jamie too. That is The Clash, of course, and already you can hear the similarities. That prominent bass line, the slow drums, they're always knocking about in Jamie T's songs. He's a self-confessed disciple of Mick Jones and Joe Strummer, and as a bass player himself, I'm sure Paul Simonon doesn't miss out on the lovin' too. A couple of years ago, Jamie was in with John Kennedy to talk through his record Trick. There's a tune on there, you will know it, it's called Robin Hood, and Jamie was very open about its origins.
Robin Hood is the title of the 9th track on the brand new album Trick.
As I went along, I kind of noticed that, which happens a lot with writing for me, is it just, to me, it kind of, it's like, totally sounds like a Clash track. And I thought, I was like, oh, this sounds like something off London Calling. And then I realised I was writing a song about a bank robber, which would lead me to think of Bank Robber by the Clash. And I thought, well, let's just go all out here.
So are there any similarities? Here are those tunes, Bank Robber, followed by Robin Hood.
Dirty walls, bank robber, everyone loves a bank robber, 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 robber.
There you go, you just can't ignore that, can you? Jamie just loves The Clash. Here he is with John Kennedy again.
I think on my first record I would have been like, oh no, it sounds too much like this, but... Mm. You know, I really enjoy writing it, and I think everyone knows I love The Clash. It's no secret.
So there you have it. Jamie T is a massive self-confessed fan of The Clash. Sorted.
Radio
X.
The Radio X Evening Show with Gordon Smart.
I think last time I saw you, Gary, was at James Corden's wedding, actually.
Oh, yes.
Which must be a few years ago, and I think you performed at it, although I was a little bit worse for wear.
Did
I imagine that right?
I performed in the ceremony, and I performed at 3 o'clock in the morning in some random tent somewhere.
I think I was in that
nobody
tent.
Asked me to get up there either.
Yeah. Well, it was a wonderful rendition of The Proclaimers' 500 Miles. I think that's what you were doing.
Okay. I don't remember.
Now, Gary, we touched upon your rider there. How has it developed in the 15 or 16 years that you've been in the band?
We used to have a bunch of joke things on the rider. I don't think they're on there anymore, but we'd have five hats of the world, must include one Stetson. And sometimes you get like a hat or two. We had two full-size stormtrooper outfits on there. We never got one of those. Ash actually have a great one where they have they ask for signed Star Wars memorabilia and pictures, and they get plenty of those. Yeah,
that's great.
There was other funny ones as well. I can't remember what they were exactly, but it's mostly, you know, beer and spirits and soft drinks and snacks. You know, right. What I mean, it's not. There's no like puppies or kittens, or the right, dressing room doesn't need to be, you know, painted a certain color or anything like that.
No wheatgrass smoothies yet either.
Wheatgrass smoothies. You know what? We're pretty healthy bunch these days. You know, so wheatgrass is just disgusting. It's probably good for you. So.
Gary, you're gonna stick around a little bit longer.
Yeah,
that is a relief. More from Gary Lightbody in just a second.
Radio X.
The Radio X Evening Show with Gordon Smart.
Gary Lightbody has stuck around longer than I was hoping for, which is a result, Gary. Thanks for that.
Excellent. I won't leave. Basically, that's the problem. They've been trying to get rid of me.
Makes yourself comfortable.
I'm here now. It's very cosy.
Ah, it's nice. It's like being on the inside of a mint, somebody once
said. Yes, indeed. It is. It's nice that you've kept it decked out the way you had it in Paddy's Day.
Well, I can only work for a radio station that's green, Gary. You know that. We do this with a lot of the guests. We like to get a review of their footballing ability. I've seen you playing football, Gary, and I'd say you're like Dalzim from Street Fighter. You've got arms and legs everywhere. It's difficult to get around you because you're omnipresent. I think your football career's looking a little bit ropey now that you've had a bad injury, haven't you?
Yeah, well, I tore my patellar tendon there about 6 or 7 months ago, so I've been recovering from that. But before that, I was playing three times a week in LA. Yeah. And I was thinking when I first moved out there and started playing, I was thinking, I'm just going to school all these guys. guys are just not going to hit them.
Yeah.
Because I actually, from a country that plays football. But my God, was I wrong. So many great players. Yeah. Played with players that used to play in the MLS and played in college. And men and women that are just light years ahead of me. I mean, the women's game out there is incredible, yeah.
Yep.
And here now it is, but Niall McGinn came down to play with us in LA.
Wow.
And brought some of his pals.
I saw that picture, actually.
Yeah, yeah. He came down and took everybody to school. He wasn't to be touched that day.
Yeah, yeah.
He wasn't to be touched. You couldn't get the ball off him. He was on my team, but the other team couldn't get the ball off him.
I was thinking back.
And he was wearing his going out trainers as well. Like, they weren't, he wasn't wearing football boots.
No,
he was wearing his going out trainers and no one could touch him.
Yeah, yeah.
Call them pick-up games out there. It's some 5-a-side, 6-a-side, whatever. I was playing two of those a week, and then I was playing in a league as well. But the league was so angry. It was just people that were taking out their work week,
right?
On like getting sent off every week, getting arguments with other team, getting arguments with their own team, and I just had to stop after a while because it was too much.
But that's it. You've got the tours coming on. You've got to look after yourself now.
Yeah,
thinking about the tour, how well prepared are you for it? I mean, have you had many rehearsals now that you've got the music?
Yeah, we've been rehearsing. Yeah. It's been great. Things are looking good, and we've got more rehearsals to go. And gigs starting pretty soon.
Yeah.
Gigs are worth 10 rehearsals anyway.
Yeah, so. Yeah. Can you give us a little teaser, one little thing, a little surprise there might be for Snow Patrol fans when they see you live? Because you once told me a great thing, and I repeat this in almost every interview, you don't go home singing the lights, you told me years ago. And I've repeated that to so many musicians.
That was somebody else's line I stole. Yeah, the set design this time around, it's funny that you should mention you don't go home singing the lights, but we're developing this stage design that is pretty bonkers. So we're really excited about it. We're hoping that we can pull it off.
It's got a 10-foot trapdoor in the middle for Gary.
It's got a 10-foot trapdoor, and any notes that I sang off key, I'm straight into the alligator pit below.
Well, Gary, you know, it's great to see you again. I'm so pleased you're back, and it's going to be brilliant seeing those live gigs in the summer and watching you getting back together on stage after all that time. It's great to have you back.
Radio X.
The Radio X Evening Show with Gordon Smart.
That was David Bowie and Starman, which is linked to our next guest, a man called Dave Hogan.
If you are fond of movies or music, you will at some point have seen a picture taken by this great man. For the last 40 years, he's been travelling the world with the most famous rock stars, movie stars, taking their pictures and just recording history, I will say. He's a brilliant photographer, a great man. He's 6'5", originally from Wales, so works as a security guard as well, just looking after journalists who he's travelled the world with, and he certainly put an arm around me during my career in newspapers. Dave Hogan, celebrity photographer, welcome to the studio. How are you, Hoagie?
I'm really well indeed.
Just played David Bowie there, and I know that you spent a lot of time with him over the years.
I had a great time with David Bowie because actually he was my original hero from school days.
Yeah.
So when you actually work with these people and you get invited along, you're not there as their new best friend. You're recording whatever's going on. And I sort of remember the first time I ever got a call from his PR, he said, do you want to come on tour with David Bowie? And I'm like, I was actually in Japan at the time, and you start getting a bit sort of like, oh, I really don't want to go home on economy.
Yeah.
To be asked to go to work with David Bowie in Canada was fantastic. But I went, oh, no, I really need to just go home. And they said, we'll fly you first class. It's amazing how your principles change when you get a first class ticket around the world. So I get to Canada. They don't travel by plane. They charter railway cars or, you know, so we're on first class carriage. And we're going across Canada just photographing, I think it was the Sound of Vision tour. Best thing ever, you know, because you're seeing how the other half live.
When you're with David Bowie and you're not actually doing the work part of it, what was he like? Well, give our listeners an idea, Hoagie.
Well, there's a protocol. These people are on tour together and you go in for periods of, you know, 1 week or something. So there's a protocol. You don't go and sit next to the artist. So this one day, he come and sat next to me. I was cacking myself thinking, he sat next to me, not me next to him. Yeah. And it's a protocol. But what he wanted was my copy of Viz magazine because he was so up into things. And
did you take that famous picture?
That picture?
That's your picture.
And that started the Viz Agony Ant column just by me going, he sat next to me to read Viz magazine. He'd heard about it and I'd got a copy of it.
Now, Hoagie, there's a very good reason you're in today because you have an exhibition on in Trafalgar Square at the moment at the Trafalgar Hotel.
Yeah.
And it's some of the greatest pictures you've taken in the last 40 years or so. And tell us a little bit about it and why you're doing it.
Well, basically, I was offered a friend of mine, Chrissy, from Concord Media. She came and said, Dave, why don't we do this thing for charity? We've got a hotel that's interested in showcasing your work. You cannot get a better space. If you walk down to Trafalgar Square, next to the Canadian Embassy, look over, the Trafalgar Hotel's there. Every one of the windows is mine. It's the best show shop window you could ever had, and I've picked out some of the great moments of being on stage with Mick Jagger, Live Aid, the Oasis Boys. We've got Spice Girls with a Brit, you know, that's 20 years ago or something like that. I was saying the other day, and I've been there, seen them come, seen them go, and I'm still doing it. I just actually don't know what else to do.
You've done all right about the whole game.
I've done okay. I'm quite happy. I smile. And just before Christmas, I shot this picture of the Rolling Stones, went to Paris, and I said, I'll come, I'll shoot the show. But these guys, they know exactly what they want.
Yeah.
And actually, I knew what I wanted, which was a nice picture before they go on stage when they're fully dressed up. They're all cool. Well, the Stones have been doing it so long, you only need like 10 seconds. They gave me, I think it was 49, and I got a great picture, which is the one that's
on the No Filter Tour.
It's
called Hoagie's Heroes, isn't it?
It's called Hoagie's Heroes, and it's hashtag Hoagie's Heroes UK.
And it's not to line your pockets either. This is all for charity. You're giving a month of your
charity. I've worked for the last month. I did a load of portraits of everybody and just asked them to make a donation to the charity. So it's been great to give back. I'm working with the Haven, which is a London-based charity that I'm a patron of, and that's for creative peoples going through difficult things at the moment. There's cancer research, and everybody knows somebody that's got that, and then Teenage Cancer Trust. So I'm trying to give to, you know, other people come out and say, well, I only work with so and so charity. Let's work with you as well. It's about giving back.
Radio X.
The Radio X Evening Show with Gordon Smart.
Hoagie, I think you've probably got a great answer to this question. Right, I'm writing this book called Slash Gordon about awkward conversations in bathrooms with famous people, and everyone seems to have one. Can you give us a great story from your showbiz anecdotes about a time you found yourself in an awkward position in a bathroom with somebody famous?
I think the one time I was in Barbados and I was with Patsy Kensit, who had come out, and Patsy Kensit was going out with Liam at the time.
Liam Gallagher, yeah?
Yeah. And we were there partying, having a good time, and as love faxes were coming over to Liam, we were writing on them and sending them back to us.
So, right, so let's get this right. Liam Gallagher, at that time, that was a massive story, wasn't it? Liam and Patsy were together. You're on a yacht with her. He's back in London. And to show the time of this story, you're faxing backwards and forwards. So Liam's sending love notes to Patsy Kensett and
we're
you're
reading them. And we're scribbling notes, like sending it back, going, hello, love Andy and Dave.
And he's going mad at the other end.
He's going mad. Who's in your room? What's going on, you know? When I actually got on land, I was feeling very, very ill. But we're all trying to be cool, and I'm trying to be even more rock and roll. And I suddenly thought, I don't feel well. And I went into her bathroom and was very, very ill all over the place. You know, I cannot handle the rock and roll lifestyle that some of these people do.
That's not true, Hoagie. Since then, though, you've gone on to take some iconic pictures of the Gallaghers with all their rock and roll heroes. And there's one in particular in the exhibition, I think, with Roger Daltrey that you took.
It's backstage at the Royal Albert Hall, and I'd been doing sort of Roger Daltrey was photographing all his sort of all the executives and the stars, and Noel and Liam were there. They're playing on that night, and they really wanted to get in next to Roger Daltrey, and that's the one time you have a bit of power as a photographer. Don't get him in a picture till you really need it. And eventually sort of Noel and Liam, are you going to get us in this picture anyway? So they come and stand next to Roger. But they've got that mean and moody, you know, enemy stare. They're not smiling. And I'm like, no, I want a happy picture. You need to smile. We don't smile. You're going to smile for me, I said. So anyway, they do smile. And it's probably the one only picture, one of the only pictures where they're both smiling at the camera at me. And he had to have the last say because he came up to me and said, do you dye your hair badly?
Liam said,
I've never dyed my hair ever since because it was the ultimate put down. But,
and
you know,
can see that picture in the exhibition. Hoagie's Heroes in Trafalgar Hotel.
Yeah.
Well, Hoagie, you know what? It's great to see you again. And Hoagie's Heroes on at the Trafalgar Hotel. Make sure you go and check it out.
Radio.
Radio
X.
The Radio X Evening Show with Gordon Smart.
The Evening Show. Classic album of the week.
X.
So we've got a lot of feelings about this album I'm about to talk about. Cast All Changed, the 16th of October 1995, and almost shed a tear when I realised that was nearly 23 years ago. I was 15 years old when this came out, and this album meant so much to me. I probably listened to it just a little bit more than Definitely Maybe, and at that time probably liked Cast just a shade more than I did Oasis, and I think there are quite a few of my friends that were in a similar boat. Just looking at the album sleeve as well, what a great cover. Four Scouse lads standing in Trafalgar Square on one of the plinths. It's a great picture. So this album, All Changed, became the highest selling debut album in the history of Polydor. Now that's a massive thing when you think about it, right? Polydor released The Who, The Jam, The Jimi Hendrix Experience, so it was a massive, massive deal. It was recorded in Oxfordshire and Sawmill Studios down in Cornwall. It reached number 7 in the UK, and to give you a sense of how successful that was, it beat David Bowie to number 7. He was at number 8 with the album we released then. AC/DC, Garbage, Oasis, What's the Story, Morning Glory, Green Day, Prince and Simply Red were above that in the album. So it was pretty fierce competition to be released at the same time as all of them. Produced by the legend that is John Leckie, who worked with The Verve, The Stone Roses and Radiohead. A brilliant man. Tracks included All Right, Sandstorm, Walk Away, Fine Time and Back of My Mind. Great, great songs. So John Power was the creative force in the band. He just left The Lads and he was previously the bassist in that band, backing singer. Eventually fell out with the maverick that was Lee Mavers. They fought over creative control, so he set up Cast in 1992. The name was taken from the final word on the Lads' eponymous album. The song was Looking Glass, and it ended with a repeated line, you'll remember it, the change is cast. That's where the name came from. Noel Gallagher was a huge fan, took them out on tour loads around 94, 95 and 96, and he described watching the band live as being like a religious experience. Cast were labelled the Who of the 90s. I saw them playing loads around that time. Irvine Beach, 1995, supporting Oasis. They were incredible. First time I'd ever seen them. And then later on, I think 96, Ballycountry Park at Loch Lomond, supporting Oasis again. They were outstanding. All Right was the album's second single, and a B-side called Follow Me Down, and both those tunes were written while Power was still in the Lads. So here are two other highlights from that incredible album, All Change, back-to-back on Classic Albums. This is Walk Away, followed by Fine Time.
The Evening Show, Classic Album of the Week.
X. Radio.
Radio.
X. The Radio X Evening Show with Gordon Smart.
The Evening Show. Classic Album of the Week.
X.
Oh, I loved every second of that. Cast, a double play from All Change, 1995 in October. Walk Away, and that was Fine Time.
proper anthem of my teenage years. Loved it. Emma's been in touch. Love, love, love the classic album of the week on Radio X. I saw Cass live for the first time last year. They were brilliant. Cheers for that, Emma. And Stuart K. Gordon, this made me chuckle. Just bought that album in a charity shop for a quid. Listen to it on my noise-cancelling headphones. Brilliant album. Look at you, Stuart, with your fancy headphones. It is a great album. And this is an all-changed classic album. In my opinion, a hugely underrated band from Perry. I think you're right as well, Perry. Brilliant stuff. That was Classic Album Chat. More next week.
Radio.
Radio.
X. The Radio X Evening Show with Gordon Smart.
Steve from Codeline is with us by the marvels of modern technology. How are you doing, Steve?
Very well. This is the first time I've ever done an interview like this with FaceTime. It's pretty cool.
Now, Steve, do us a little favour. Would you paint a picture of where you are in the world right now?
I'm at home in Dublin, in Ireland. I was rehearsing and then I literally just got in the door.
So, Steve, you're back in Dublin. Last time I spoke to you, you were living in Birmingham. So you've moved back home. And it's been 3 years since the last album. So tell us what's been going on.
We lived in Birmingham for a while. And I think as much as we love Birmingham as a city, we were all just a little bit homesick, you know.
Yeah.
And we kind of toured the first album around the world and then toured the second album around the world. Like, went to Australia, Japan, everywhere, Philippines, America. It was amazing. But we kind of took a little bit of a break last year, and but we were finishing our third album, which would be out hopefully around July.
Yeah, because the first two albums did brilliantly. The first album, a million copies, I think the second one was gold, and you've passed that, you know, the difficult second album stage. So what's in store with the third album?
On the third album, for the first time we've kind of collaborated with a lot of different people, like different producers. We've worked very closely with Johnny McDade from Snow Patrol.
Yeah,
he's been awesome. We didn't want to make the same album again. Like, our comfort zone is like slow, emotional ballads. And every time I sit down, I know the first thing I do is write a song that is really sad. And look, I don't mean to. I think it's my comfort zone, you know? So trying to like get uncomfortable and just get out of our comfort zone and try something new. And I think we've really achieved that with the album. So.
I don't know what it is this week, but we had Gary Lightbody from Snow Patrol on the other night, and then we've got you guys on tonight. Is it because Ireland are doing so well at everything at the moment? You've got the Six Nations under your belt, Rory McIlroy's winning again, and then there's another album coming from Snow Patrol and Codeline. You're taking over the world.
We're just deadly.
That's the perfect Irish answer to that question, isn't it? Right, yeah. Steve, we're going to play the new single. Do you want to tell us a little bit about this song in particular? It's called Follow Your Fire.
Yeah, the song, it was produced by Steve Mack, who's a great producer. And the song's, it's an upbeat song. It's quite dancey. It's just about, you know, following your fire, your gut feeling, following your dreams or whatever, you know. So, I hope everybody likes it. And there you go.
It's optimistic. I really like that about it. You know, in a world where everybody seems quite miserable at the moment, it's an optimistic title. So this is it for the first time. Follow Your Fire on Radio X by Codeline.
Radio.
Radio.
X.
The Radio X Evening Show with Gordon Smart.
So that's the new one from Codeline. It's called Follow Your Fire. And I've got Steve from the band joining us by FaceTime right now. Steve, thank you for letting us hear that for the first time. What are the emotions like as the third album comes out and you get ready to go again? Because it has been 3 years. Are you slightly apprehensive or just excited?
I am apprehensive. I'm nervous, but it's kind of like nervous excitement. I'm more excited. I really want to, you know, excited about getting back on the road and touring and playing new songs and and because we've kind of changed our sound as well, I'm excited to see how people react and if we get new fans. And I'm nervous, but I'm excited.
Good stuff.
More excited.
We haven't seen the tour dates yet, but can you give us a sniff or any kind of idea of where we might get a chance to see you in the next year?
We're gonna do one of the big British festivals, and we're playing a lot of festivals around Europe, and I'd say we'll probably be announcing a UK tour towards the end of the year, I'd say.
Excellent stuff. Yeah, lots to look forward to. Now, I could sit here and talk about the great gigs that you've played with Codeline, right? Irish bands on stage always have some kind of magic. There's something special when you perform. But tell us about a gig that didn't go to plan, Steve, one that was a disaster. What's the one that makes your blood run cold?
There's so many gigs flooding through my mind right now. There's too many.
Yeah.
Well, actually, well, one jumps out. I remember playing a show, and I don't know why we were booked for this show, but it was like a metal bar, and God knows why Codaline were playing in a metal bar. It doesn't make sense, but yeah, we turned up, and first of all, the venue was tiny. The stage was bigger than the venue, if that makes any sense.
Yeah, it does.
it was bizarre, but so. Anyway, we set up, we played, and nobody turned up, but there was a lot of bikers downstairs. One biker, this big birdie guy, just kind of stood in the doorway, which was literally about 10 foot away from where I was, like, singing on stage, and he kind of just, like, looked at us, and just kind of, like, you know, sussing us out, seeing if he liked it, and he just... shook his head and then just turned around and walked out.
It's character building stuff.
But yeah, it is true.
Well, listen, Steve, we'll see you on tour this summer. Thanks very much for coming on tonight. Go and have a great night, and Friday night in Dublin as well. You're going to be having a proper night out tonight, aren't you?
Yeah, who knows, the night is young.
Live every day like it's Friday. Steve from Codaline, thanks for joining us in the evening show.
Radio X,
the Radio X evening show with Gordon Smart.
That was Liam Gallagher, and for what it's worth, on Radio X, you're listening to The Evening Show with me, Gordon Smart. I can tell you that Liam Gallagher's brother Noel once submitted a song to be the theme tune for a James Bond movie. I think it was a version of Freaky Teeth, if you know that song, but it was knocked back. But you never know, one day maybe Noel will write a song for it. He certainly have a shout if the next man I'm about to tell you about is involved. Danny Boyle is going to direct the 25th installment of the James Bond franchise. It will be Daniel Craig's fifth Bond movie. And what's interesting about that is that he was umming and ahhing about doing another one, and I suspect he has had a word in his ear to let him know that Danny Boyle will be in charge. Now, how about this for a writing partnership? John Hodge and Danny Boyle joining forces. Now, they did A Life Less Ordinary, Shallow Grave, Trainspotting, so they have a brilliant, brilliant history of writing great scripts together, and they will turn their attention to this. They've already started writing it, and I can tell you, Danny Boyle was on the red carpet last week in New York talking about his new TV show, and he confirmed the great news. He said, "We're working on a script. John Hodge and I are working on it. He's the man behind Trainspotting. We're working on a script, and we'll see what happens. But it's a great idea, so hopefully it will work, you know. I'd love to be able to tell you more, but I'm not going to." And then he laughed and walked off. So that's pretty much it, isn't it? Danny Boyle will be doing the next Bond movie. And what got me really thinking about this, if it goes well, does he have the power to stay on for another and tell Daniel Craig that it's worth one more go after this? I still think he's got another couple under his belt, and he's been a great James Bond. So something to get excited about there. And also, Danny Boyle's next project is with Richard Curtis, the man behind Four Weddings and a Funeral and Notting Hill, and they're doing something with all the music that the Beatles recorded in their career. A bit of a musical and a comedy. Sounds good. Busy couple of years ahead for Danny Boyle. And I tell you what, I was beginning to wonder about the James Bond franchise, but I reckon it's in safe hands now.
Radio X.
The Radio X Evening Show with Gordon Smart.
Now, it's coming to the end of the evening show, which means it's story time, so get yourself comfortable. Producer Vin, let's have some appropriate music, please. Aha! So, I've got the Strokes to close the show in just a second. You might imagine them to be super confident, invincible rock stars. But according to a great book last year, they suffer from the same green-eyed jealousy as the rest of us. Especially when Kings of Leon showed up on their turf looking hairier and sexier than them. For a few years, the Strokes were the big fish in the coolest pond around, but eventually they fell victim to the usual rock and roll vices. Plus New York's property prices and a clampdown on the Big Apple nightlife, there was an extended bout of sulking as their rivals Kings of Leon outdid them by committing the cardinal sin of being more successful. That is a quote from a review of Meet Me in the Bathroom by Lizzie Goodwin. It's a great book, and it's a tale of the New York music scene in the noughties. So let's massage their ego by giving the Strokes the honour of playing us out tonight. Wasn't it a shame? Kings of Leon stealing their thunder.
Radio X. The Radio X Evening Show with Gordon Smart.
Thanks very much for downloading the Evening Show podcast. Producer Vin's so grateful. He's waving and saluting to you right now across the microphone. That was a Vin. That was emotional. We'll be back with another edition of the Evening Show podcast next week.
Radio X.